Right, welcome back. We are here with Marcus Ashworth, who's an independent market strategist, as opposed to myself, who I'm just a renegade commentator. But I just wanted you to look, a little exercise here for you. Your chosen subject today, central banks and the global economy. And as if
a real thriller.
As if by magic, yes, exactly. Millions of people will be watching this. We've got the headlines of the day. Just thought you wanted to, might want to look at, you know, just where we are at the moment as we head into this the Jackson Hole revelations at the end of the week.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, it's with regards to what the next payroll number is. Three on the trot are really decent numbers, and then it will make the Fed probably think it is about time to hike. Of course, there's the election coming up, but do they hike in September because the economic data backs them? They can't really do it in November because that's right on the election, and in December it's in between the Obama and presumably Clinton. Is that again too sensitive? But they obviously want to hike, or at least make the market feel they're going to hike one more time this year. Is it going to be December as it was December last year, or do they actually bring that forward to September and set the ball rolling again? I think they really are. It's 50-50, but in the sense I don't think they themselves have that confidence to truly do it. But they want the market to feel there is a really proper live meeting, and then there's a reasonably good chance they could go. Whether or not something happens in the meantime, as it normally does, to make them get scared because, you know, someone fell off a perch somewhere else around the world, then, you know, be it China, be it Brexit, be it whatever excuse they want to use. But the reality is there is enough economic strength in the US economy to justify a rate hike. It's something they should have got on with a few months back. They delayed for various different reasons. Maybe after three very strong numbers. That May payroll number spooked them all in early June. That was, oh my God, the world's falling apart. And then all of a sudden that was rubbish, that number, and we've corrected back. We've had, as I said, two very strong ones. Get the third one. It's very hard for them probably to resist, and it's quite clear with Fisher, Dudley, Williams, all teeing Janet up for Jackson Hole. She normally doesn't speak at Jackson Hole. It's normally Bernanke's thing. So she's speaking this time. We will see what she'll obviously be very careful what she says. She'll lay out the various tool books and talk about various different instruments they can or can't use. But the reality is, if she comes across as her cohorts on a slightly more hawkish bent, the market will probably price in that 70% chance, which is, as Larry Summers says, is the key.
Right. I mean, there were a couple of other points there. We'll skirt over the Mongolian budget deficit. Being bigger than normal, because you probably haven't had time to do your homework on that. But the Bank of England paying high premiums.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked that one up.
In the QE buyback. What does that mean?
Well, the first attempt they had at the first round of QE on the ultra longs failed, as we know, even though they paid two full points up. They can only get 96% of what they wanted. Last time round, last Tuesday, it went very well, but that was purely because the following day was a 40-year auction. Now, they got it over 1.56 times on Tuesday, yesterday, but the point is that they had to pay up again very substantially through the market to offer to get the bonds they want. Is this sustainable for the next 6 months, buying 60 billion sterling worth of bonds? Can they really keep buying the ultra-long end when it's very evident the pension funds don't want to sell it to them? They really feel that they need these assets because it's the risk-free asset they need to match against their liabilities. Is it the wrong thing for the Bank of England to be buying the ultra-longs? Why don't they just focus on the shorts and mediums and do it almost like an operation untwist where they can balance up and give some liquidity to the long end, which is clearly what's good. Do they really want the yield curve super flat and super low in yield? Maybe they do, but the effect it's having on the efficiency of the market isn't very clever, and they're not winning any friends who say both with the gems and indeed with the ultimate holders, which are the pension funds and the life insurers.
Right, and is there any feeling that the actual move to do all this was not really necessary? The data doesn't reflect it.
I don't think anyone really feels that there was any justification for this. The only way you could possibly say it's justification is if in the autumn statement Philip Hammond comes out and cuts VAT by 2.5%, cash for clunkers, you name it, a raft of different things, a proper infrastructure boost, and you've got the fiscal and then the monetary, which has already clicked off already, and it works in conjunction. If it's just like the Bank of Japan going ad nauseum, firing that one arrow of Abenomics, and I don't think you've seen it in Europe. QE doesn't work very well unless it's the right atmosphere, right environment, in conjunction with a fiscal policy as well. So,
if it's on that point, wouldn't it have been better 8 years ago if there were just fiscal initiatives rather than this?
Of course, but, you know, of course, it's all about blaming the bankers. It's all about X, Y, Z. There wasn't the ability to do that. You know, it did work for the Americans, and it semi-worked in the UK as well. So, I mean, you can't knock too much what QE did, which is effectively lower interest rates and interest rate spreads, more importantly.
So housing
boom, it was like negative rates.
So housing boom, boom and a trickle down into the economy.
Well, it made assets investable again. And of course, that's why everyone complains it made the rich richer, and because they could have the money to afford to hold assets. But nonetheless, it worked in a crude sense, because it continued to work if you do it time after time again. It's less and less and less effect. And the point that we're at now is it deleterious. Actual fact, some of the side effects are worse than the actual effect they're trying to create in the first place.
Right. I mean, there's quite a lot going on today. I mean, even though we're in that holiday mode, for the German economy, it looks great.
Yeah, the German economy, of course, is doing well, but I mean, they are in a situation where they are beggaring everyone else. Their current account surplus is as ridiculously large as ours is ridiculously low in our deficit. But you know that they are, you know, doing well at the moment, but there are problems brewing up for Germany, which will hit at some point.
Yeah, German residential building permits are up 30% in the first half. I mean, there's some pretty punchy numbers out there.
Well, they've got an economy which is helped by an overly weak currency and too low interest rates. So what do you expect? And their government borrowing is for free.
Bring back the Deutschmark. And then finally, we've got just a little bit on Japan there. It's kept its assessment of the economy unchanged in August, but offered slightly more downbeat view on consumer inflation than last month. They're still, it's all about the currency, though, isn't it?
Meh. I mean, what you get out of the Japanese government on this sort of stuff is literally meaningless. It is about the currency. Can Japanese industry last with a $100 yen? Just about, yes, 100, 105. Obviously, they want it back up towards 120, and they will try their very best to get it up there. But for the moment, the Japanese economy is with lower oil. That's the key thing for the overall Japanese economy. And the currency isn't a great help, but they're much more balanced than it was before. A lot of its manufacturing is offshore, as we know, in China and various places around the world. So the impact of the stronger yen is not as severe as it used to be.
Okay, well, on that note, Marcus Ashworth, independent market strategist, thank you very much for your views on the central banks and global economy. Hopefully by next time you'll have done your homework on the Mongo.
I actually knew all about it.
Well, we'll be back after the break with that. No, we won't. See you after the break anyway.